Welcome to a special edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Bob Carpenter, founder of Inside Lacrosse Magazine, and we are speaking with Syracuse lacrosse personalities on the team's 100th anniversary. At first, Paul Carcaterra was known to be this Syracuse middy slash attackman with a cannon of an outside shot. Then you'd see him scrambling around on the sidelines reporting for CSTV, and he did not know what he was doing. He'll tell you as much himself. Paul's kind of a madman when he's not on the camera. He'll pace around, scribbling notes to himself, mumbling lines to himself, and he'll look up at you with this wild-eyed smile, and you can just see that he loves it. He loves being on the sidelines. He loves being around big-time sporting events. He's like a little kid. But all of a sudden, boom, the camera's on. He'll stand up straight and belt out this piece of decisive, powerful insight. And then it's over and he's running around again trying to find the next bit of news. Like Quint, Paul had no formal training. He went straight from the playing field to the sideline and had to figure it out himself. And he has really developed some serious broadcasting chops in lacrosse and beyond lacrosse. As you'll hear in this interview, on a cellular level, he loves this sport. This conversation with Paul was a lot of fun. And here we go. One more Syracuse great. Was the broadcasting thing, was it something that you studied? Was it something you always wanted to do?
More of a lacrosse thing, you know. I kind of, like, beat myself up over it. I wish I could go back in time and be tutored in the different ways of the profession. I mean, it's widely regarded as the best communication school in the country, and it didn't even cross my mind. I went there to play lacrosse. CSTV had an opening back in 2004. There were some Syracuse people that remembered me while I was at Syracuse. The rest is history.
You look like you have so much fun when you're down there.
I do. Honestly, you know, I have some buddies who they're not the happiest with their profession. And what I do is what I love to do.
Like, I had problems being in the press box because I was still a fan. I was a player. I wanted to cheer and make noise. Did you have problems not being a fan, especially when you were covering Syracuse games?
You know, at first it was strange, and I was really apprehensive to put myself out there. We're talking about 2005 when I started really covering some of my alma mater's games. Eventually it clicked within a year or two. It's like, I got to do my job. I will tell you, though, at first it was very difficult. Before the game, if I see Coach Simmons or I see Coach Defco, there's obviously some great moments. And after the game, if I see them, that's great. But during that 60 minutes, I honestly feel no difference calling a Syracuse game than if I was calling a North Carolina or Virginia game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's apparent to people watching. And the same thing goes for Quint. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Quint.
He's awesome.
I learn so much about the sport just watching a broadcast of his. What has he taught you, either by you just watching him work, or has he literally taken you under his wing?
It wasn't ever a situation where Quint sat down and gave me tips. So a lot of learning and admiration from Quint just kind of came naturally when we would talk about things. I picked his brain a lot. I'd ask him questions. I still do today, you know, and we text each other all the time during the lacrosse season on things that we see, and we joke around. We have a lot of fun together, but at the end of the day, Quint has an amazing mind for the sport of lacrosse. He wastes very little time in terms of diving into information and drawing analysis. He's a true professional in terms of his craft. He's always learning, Quint. He does sweet stuff for the sport, man. He, like, people really have to sit back and appreciate what type of professional they have as a voice of the sport of lacrosse. But, you know, the last couple of years, I'm having a lot of fun with him, too. I mean, you know, it's just constantly pinging back and forth because we have different lacrosse minds. You'll see us both break down a replay, and I don't even really have to pay too much attention to what he's saying because we have different perspectives. If he's going super tight on something, then I can go big picture of what's happening in the game and why that play developed. And maybe he's breaking down the significance of the actual dodge itself.
In the SU-100 dinner, you guys talked a lot about being a part of one of Coach Simmons' teams, stepping on that field. There was no second-guessing things. You made the point that carried through your entire life in so many different ways.
Coach Simmons was the best teacher I've ever been around in my life, and I feel like he just prepared you for big moments. I actually would rather be in a big moment all the time and feel pressure. Even now, like, I don't have that thrill of playing the game of lacrosse, but I want to be in a game when it's tied and I have to make a call or I have to chase down a coach at the end of a football game. Like, those are the moments that Coach Simmons prepared me for the most because he gave me confidence. You know, I tell people this all the time, Bob. Like, Coach Simmons really didn't teach me anything much about lacrosse in terms of, like, the X's and O's. He never pulled me aside and said, Paul, this guy's guarding you this way. You need to do this, that. But what he did do is he put his hand on my shoulder, and he would tell me that today's my day, and I'm going to dominate. And the power, for all the coaches out there, the power in something like that is just bigger than anything in the world. Because as an 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kid, to hear that from your coach in a sport that you put so much time, you're invested so much in regards to training and focus, it's your life. For the guy who's in charge of you to have that much belief in you, you can't even put into words. So I try to live my life that way, and I try to treat people like that too. I mean, he just treated everyone on our team with so much respect, and you wanted to win. You wanted to win for him. You wanted to win for the team that you're in. It's the same now. Is, you know, I'm not on a team, but I'm part of a team. You know, it's our broadcast team, and the better that Eamon can do, the better that Quint, the better that Anish Schroff can do, because we're part of that team. And at the end, that's hard for people to realize sometimes in life, whether you're a kid or an adult. Like, it's not about you. It's about the team that you're in. And if you invest in that every single day, Bob, you come out on top and you look better in the long run.
Let's just hit on ESPN real quick. Their broadcasts are phenomenal. We've always said that lacrosse is a sport that just doesn't translate well to television. But with the amount of investment that ESPN's made and all the camera angles and all the reporters, the games really are enjoyable. Have we hit a plateau as far as production value?
I don't think we've hit a plateau, and I'm not just saying that. I also think that it is a sport sometimes that's difficult to translate, not for Bob Carpenter or Paul Carpenter. It's harder for the new person to the sport to watch a game on TV and to really fall in love. So I think the game will be shot differently in the future. And like all great things, if you don't evolve, you're going to die. So, you know, the people at ESPN are brilliant, and they'll figure it out, and they'll continue to do things. You know, we messed around this year. I don't know if you saw the Virginia-Carolina game. I was on the sideline with Anish Schroff. We called the game from the restraining box and in the substitution box. We were on the field, both of us. I also, during that game, kind of just toyed with these new ref cam glasses that I actually put a pair of glasses on that had a video camera on them. And we started doing things during the game where they would actually shoot to me, and just like any other camera that was cutting into, seeing the action of the game. So that's just like an experiment, and maybe that one doesn't stick. But I think if you continue to have that mindset, which we do, if something's going to stick, and we will have a different perspective on the sport for sure.
I loved at the banquet, they put a video package up, and you were in the car driving around. I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, this will be funny. This is like James Corden's car karaoke. Kenny Nims was there and it was a cool angle and you're driving around talking and you're looking left, looking right. But then you hit heavy topics that pulled at a lot of heartstrings. And I was like, wow, this little camera is capturing one of the most powerful pieces of lacrosse video content I've seen. Talk about Fred Cambria, how that came about. And while you were shooting that, did you know that it was going to go in that direction?
What we did was we did a piece on the 2009 title game. I feel like anytime you have long-form interviewing and it becomes way more conversational, the best stuff is the stuff you didn't plan for. So, like, did I go in there thinking I'd ask Kenny what type of connection he has with his father who passed that wore the same number that played in the title game 25 years prior to that? That stuff didn't come about. It was more like we broke down the game, but then it just came from all different angles. The camera became almost like a non-factor there, where if I asked the same exact question to Kenny in a room with lights and a big camera staring at him with me across from him, I think you'd get a totally different perspective.
I totally agree.
The idea was to have have a drive around with, and I did it with Miles Jones too. I don't know if you saw that piece, but I did a drive around with him prior to the season, and we touched on his life, his legacy, his path from a diverse background in a sport that rarely sees. It was awesome too. So the best stuff just comes when there's a ramp that's provided. Like Kenny might have said something, and I jumped somewhere else. And my ADHD kicked in, and maybe we can get back to one other thing, but that's okay.
Yeah. In all honesty, that's what I've been doing with these interviews. Pat McCabe and I, you know, I got a bunch of questions, and I don't get past question number two.
No.
Because he starts telling a story, and I want to know more about that. And then the next story leads to that. We've been on the phone now for 90 minutes, and I'm like, I got three questions into my list.
Yeah, people want real stuff. The stuff you don't plan for is the best. I go into every interview with an idea of where I want to go if he gives me the normal questions, but if he gives me something, you know, like, I'm so disappointed with the defense, blah, 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 I'm not going to stop there and then ask another question. You know, those are ramps that are gold. You got to take those.
Let me ask you about Casey. I know him off the field, right? Greatest guy ever.
Yeah.
All smiles. But you know he's competitive.
Oh, beyond.
I'd never seen it. I'd never seen the competitive side until the World Indoor Championships this past summer. And I just happened to be walking past the Team USA locker room right before they took to the arena. And his face was bright red, and he was like hyperventilating, and he was punching walls, and he looked like he was about to chew off his own arm. I was like, that's the energy that makes him so great. Just talk about Casey in general, what it was like to be on the field with him.
From the minute he stepped on campus, he was different. I mean, the way that he played the game, how hard he went, too. That's what people don't realize about the Pels, how hard they play in practice every day, how tough they are. Look, when he stepped on campus as a freshman, Rick Beardsley and Chad Smith and Hans Schmidt were seniors. They would beat him senseless in practice because that's just the way it was. Just, oh, here's the rookie. Get after him. Boom, boom, boom. He never complained once. Came back for more, and he gained everyone's respect as a freshman. He was a second-team All-American. I just think that his love for the game, his passion, his toughness. I'm watching highlights of this guy at 40 years old of his last game in Major League Lacrosse this past weekend with the Florida Launch. He went for 4 goals and 3 assists. I'm watching his first step. It's still insanely quick. He's getting hacked up. He's throwing his body all over the place. This guy, I mean, that's what, to me, lacrosse is all about. And when you look at what Casey and Gary Gate did, that's different than everyone else. They played to basically they were 40 years old. And the toughness, the competitive nature, that, to me, has separated them from everyone else. Because there's been some guys, the other pals, Mikey. But, you know, he hung it up well before he was 30. And there was a lot of guys that did it at the super elite level that you could say, oh, this guy's one of the best ever. The more I think about it, from a whole body of work, like I did the Mount Rushmore of college lacrosse, and Casey wasn't on it, and I beat myself up over it in regards to, you know, his body of work. And you're hard-pressed to see who you would take off. I had Lyle Thompson, Dave Petromala, Mikey Powell, and Gary Gates. From a college lacrosse standpoint, I mean, no brainer. Those are the guys to me. But if you look at overall Mount Rushmore of lacrosse, Gary Gate and Casey Powell have to be on it. They did it for 20 years in college and pro. I mean, that is insane. I'm his age. I struggle with a spin workout, and I'm in pretty good shape. This guy's hitting the crap beat out of him every single weekend. This guy's 23 years old. He's still slicing and dicing them. His impact on the sport and how long he dominated for, it's mind-boggling.
Let's keep flying through some Mount Rushmore-type analogies. Give me your greatest goalies of all time.
All-encompassing or college?
Thinking college. Like, I'm thinking the elite college level. Like, let's kind of keep it zeroed in on Syracuse.
Yeah. Elite college, I'm going to go with Larry Quinn first. No one in the history of he's the first guy on the college goalie Mount Rushmore. Let me break him down for a second. No one did what he did in that 2-year span at Johns Hopkins in 84, 85. National Player of the Year both years. National Goaltender of the Year, obviously, both years. Championship game MVP, both years. My first question I asked Larry Quinn this year, I saw him on the field, how did you not start as a freshman sophomore? What he did, the National Player of the Year, back-to-back years, Larry Quinn was, 84-85, and they won both national titles.
Then he was Team USA. He was Team USA goalie after that, right? Or was he Team USA goalie twice?
Yep, he played. He played Team USA, I believe, 86 and 90. Yeah, he's a no-brainer, dude. He's. I mean, anyone wants to argue with me about Larry Quinn, I'll laugh at. Number two, just college, not international, because he never played on a world team. Scott Bacigalupo.
Right.
What he did at Princeton, winning two national titles, three-time first-team All-American. This was the program. He took a leap of faith. Princeton was not good before he got there. Obviously, Bill Tierney had something to do with that, too. But Bacigalupo was his guy. And then the other two, for college, and neither of these guys have suited up in international play, too. They both won national titles as freshmen. One is John Galloway, who's the all-time winningest goalie in college lacrosse history. I think he'll be on the next world team. And the other... It's Quint, who won a national title as a freshman at Johns Hopkins. He's a four-time All-American, two-time first-team All-American. To win a national title as a freshman, Quint never played in international play for Team USA. I think one of the years he had an awesome tryout and potentially got robbed. So I think from a college lacrosse standpoint, those guys are... You know, then there's other guys who had, like, single years that were just insane, like Tillman Johnson and... In 2003, he was ridiculous. But you didn't have the body of work of those guys. My own brother Brian was great. He was National Goalie of the Year sophomore, but he didn't have the championships of those.
What about Schmoller?
Paul Schmoller, definitely in that conversation. But who do you unseat there if you're going to take Schmoller? Sal Acacio, UMass.
I was talking to Pat McCabe about Palom, and we were saying, Does Palom's personality and the orange pants and the fact that he was playing with all these other guys and he was in an era with all these other goalies shortchange his abilities in the cave?
I mean, from a winning standpoint, I mean, just what he did was incredible. I think because of the way that they played offense, too, they put a lot of pressure on him defensively, so he didn't have the gaudy numbers. I mean, anyone that plays the Gates Marichak and Rodney Dumpson and Zilberti, they're not going to have a defensive first mentality. So you're going to let up 12, 13 goals. So I think anyone who thinks back of that era of 88, 89, 90, the three national titles, the first thing they think of is the Gates and offense. Matt Palom, a lot like John Galloway, if you're going to ask me, he's the second best goalie in Syracuse lacrosse history. And I don't even need to look at his save percentage, but because of the fact of how much of a winner he was. A lot of people say, oh, it's so easy to win with the Gates, it's easy to win with LeBron. And look, there's superstars everywhere. You got to manage egos. You got to be a leader.
Look at the teams they were playing.
Yeah.
Look how good Cornell was.
Yeah.
Goldstein, Wurzburger, Meyer.
Guys. Yeah.
Hopkins was ridiculous. Maryland was ridiculous. Yeah. Carolina was ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you know, if it's so easy to win, why doesn't everyone win, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the same thing. I can't stand when people are like, he's just a crease guy. He's a crease guy. Wouldn't it be nice if everyone had a crease guy that could score 50 goals?
I love it, man. All right, well, look, this has been great. Thanks for your time. This has been a special edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Bob Carpenter, and be sure to pick up a copy of the May issue of Inside Lacrosse, where we take an up-close and personal look at this historic team. Thanks, Kark.
Love it. You're the man, Kark.